lights at the Chameleon Club in Lancaster, PA. And of course, it's also Record Store Day. So first question, if you picked up an album or not, but what album were you most excited for Record Store Day?
I don't know. Probably some repeats. I mean, one of my all-time favorite records is Face Value by Phil Collins.
Cool.
So I would probably go find some Phil Collins stuff or maybe a Cults record or something.
Nice. And also, recently in the past couple days, you played in Westchester, mm-hmm. and Fred Mascherino opened up for you.
Yeah.
How'd that come about?
It was totally a shock for me, actually. I mean, the band who's been touring with us for the past little while, Ambassadors, ran into a little bit of an accident, so they have been unable to join us. So we've been kind of scrambling to get local acts in different cities. And so that night, I had no idea Fred was from Westchester, yeah. kind of born and raised, right? And yeah. The promoter knew him well, and kind of, I guess he saw him in Wawa a couple days before. I was like, hey,
cool.
You want to jump on the show?
That's awesome.
So he was into it. And so my tour manager, I was like, who's opening tonight? And he's like, oh, Fred Mascherino was in a band called Take Back Sunday. I'm like, you're joking, right? He's not.
That's so
he's
cool.
not playing. And I asked him probably 30 times to confirm it before I really was going to tweet it, because I was like, there's
yeah.
no way. Because I'm such a big Take Back Sunday fan.
Sure. Yeah. Totally.
I read that you got your start professionally writing music for Sony Music Publishing and eventually wrote a few songs for the show Instant Star at a very early age. How did you first get noticed and get all of that momentum?
The songwriting, especially for other people, was kind of, it was a side thing. It was something that was happening, and probably because it helps you get better at what you do. And it's kind of the thing with songwriting, like everything you do lends to the next big thing. So when you get to go to a songwriting camp and write from another perspective, it's just like working the muscle in a different way. So it wasn't like I was signed specifically to write for other people.
Right.
I met my manager when I was 15.
Okay.
And I'm 25. So I've been working with him for 10 years. It's amazing. So
cool.
That was kind of the first of the discovery, I guess. And then about a year or two after that, got picked up by Sony Publishing.
Okay.
That's kind of our first goal, to hone the idea of hone songwriting, because that's the most important part of this industry as far as I'm concerned, writing a great song. So things like that, they would give me the opportunity to get involved with, to get better at my craft and write better songs and learn the art of songwriting. And you get to work with other people, and the skill of collaboration is a whole other element that's really important. So those writing camps, especially for that show Instant Star, were really cool, really special. But, I mean, I wasn't writing for myself, right? I keep even all my better stuff for myself.
You know? Sure, totally. You have to.
Yeah.
So congratulations on Siberia, success
and
everything.
Oh, thank you.
It's a huge leap forward from the listening, which was great in its own right.
Thank you.
But I think Siberia is more of my kind of taste as far as the electronica stuff, the heavy, dubstepy a little bit.
Yeah.
What inspired you to go a little heavier and more dance floor ready?
It's important to make music you love, and that's a reflection of what you're listening to. The worst thing you can do for yourself is make a record that isn't something you want to play every night, you know? And that's the stuff that was inspiring me at the time, some darker electro stuff like Crystal Castles and Monkopf and some dubstep things, Scream, Barrio, Resco. And I was really being moved by the elements that were coming out of that. And after having toured on the listening for a couple of years, I have an amazing band, and they put their own spin on their parts, and always a little bit heavier live and a little bit more rock, and the listening even started to turn more in that direction. So naturally the next progression would be going a little bit heavier, and I thought after I heard some dubstep stuff for the first time, was listening to all these really cool gritty elements in music, I was thinking, man, this is going to be a great contrast with the softness of what I'm used to.
Right.
And it was perfect. And then the Holy Fuck Club collaboration came in, and they, you know, heightened that and brought in that excessive grit and that imperfection to it that I thought brought a lot of soul to it.
Well, how do you get hooked up with them?
You know, they're from Toronto, but I met them at Reading Leeds Festival in the UK. We were both playing on the dance stage, so met over there and kind of got acquainted, and it was actually my manager's suggestion after I was telling him how I wanted to go a little heavier and a little darker with the next record, and I was starting to understand the new place. He's like, why don't you try something for the book? And we got together and jammed, and it was great. I would never have anticipated that being the collaboration of the year, but it was awesome.
So it may be too early to tell, but do you see yourself going even further down this heavier musical path on your next release?
I'm pretty addicted to the energy live that creates.
Sure.
But I don't know what's going to happen in the next record. That's the beauty of it. Each record has its own place in your life and in a phase, and I always feel like it's some kind of like spiritual download that you just can't force, it just happens. And,
sure.
And I didn't get the world of, like, the concept of Siberia until, I think it was the end of 2010. It's like, it hits you and you know what you're supposed to do. So I'm waiting for that next place, and who knows what it'll be, but I do know that I'm having a lot of fun with this.
Cool.
So.
Also, where do you draw your inspiration from? I mean, besides, like, musically, I should say.
It's funny. It comes from a few different places. I mean, there's inspiration drawn from things I'm going through in everyday life, okay, and things that I'm feeling, right? And that
sure
influences certain songs, the very personal, intimate songs, where
sure
others, like A Flux and Flow, is something that you want to say, but that song comes out because it started from the beat. The beat started, and then you build
yeah
the bass, and then the vibe happens, and you're like, oh, I'm going to write about this. And then you kind of get lost when you write the lyrics in the music, and then that all comes later.
Cool.
But then there's, like, on this record, I was being influenced a lot by fantasy art.
Nice.
I brought in this book of art by an artist named Clyde Caldwell, and he does stuff
okay
for Magic the Gathering, like Dungeons and Dragons, and has done heavy metal magazine covers and stuff.
Very
and
nice.
He's a, it's very much like beautiful, almost sexy, like
yeah
fantasy, dark
no, exactly
worlds he creates. And he does a lot of magic stuff. And I remember reading through that book and then listening to playlists of stuff I was being inspired by.
Cool.
And it's nothing to read. I mean, you're looking at pictures, but I thought
yeah
it was such a cool soundtrack to some of these worlds he created.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to make a soundtrack to these other worlds, you
that's
know?
Awesome.
And that's kind of what was a big... I brought that book in every single day when I worked on Siberia.
That's very cool. Since you were apparently in charge of the creative direction of your album's art, I was curious about the theme of the design. One image shows a desolate scene with birds, and something appears to be a blood splatter appears on a few of the panels. What's going on there?
In the Siberia art?
Yeah.
It's, I worked with a guy named Garnet Armstrong on it, and,
okay,
and he did the last record art as well, and we kind of collaborate on the vibe of the record in general, and then he kind of takes it from there. So what happened with Siberia was, previous to that point, I'd always made my album covers look kind of graphic novel-y.
Okay.
Like very cartoon. There was, I mean, aside from the acoustic album, which was all about being stripped down,
right,
there's never been a real picture of me on the cover of my work. So when Siberia came around, it was like, this album is all about stripping down. And although it's electronic, it's like flipping it on its end, and you're getting the underbelly, and you're getting all the imperfections. So let's do something really raw and a little gritty
yeah
to reflect the music for the album art. But I also can't let go of the graphic novel thing, too.
Sure.
It's something I love, and I'm really influenced by, especially with the Clyde Caldwell influence and everything.
Yeah.
So the cover was this, it's just this very raw picture of myself. And then as you delve into the art, it goes into sort of this gritty city scene. And there's like the CN Tower in there, obviously,
yeah,
a reference
cool
to Toronto. And then when you open the booklet, there's basically illustrated versions of all the photos within the art. So it's kind of like a bridge between the two worlds for me.
Cool.
Coming out of the graphic novel world into this sort of raw underbelly of real life.
Very nice. And your own artwork, some of which is available for sale as lithographs on your website, iamlights.com,
yeah,
seems to be heavily
nice
inspired
plug
by comic books. How long have you done art, and what got you started?
I was probably drawing before I was making music, but music obviously took over and spent a lot more time on that. But I love drawing, and I love art. And when I was young, I used to make my own comics. It was before I even read my first comic, but I thought there was something cool about the panels. I read Far Side. That was the first comic I ever
nice
read.
Yeah.
And so I invented this character named Monty. It was very morbid. He was a frog, and he would like go in all these adventures and get his limbs cut off and his eyes sliced off. And like, and I'd show my parents, and they'd be like, oh, this is really nice. What's happening
just
in here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's always kind of just been a way to exercise your imagination,
sure,
and things like that. And I think when it was probably about 6 years ago I first moved to Toronto, I didn't have any money or anything. I mean,
okay,
I was just getting by, you know, just starting out in music. And, you know, when people's birthdays came around, I didn't have any money to buy them presents, really, so I just painted them stuff. And
yeah,
one, I painted a painting for my manager.
Oh, cool.
And he loved it. Put it in his like, foyer. And a couple years later, I was just like, why don't you put some of these out? This is awesome. So I started to release them, and it was a great idea. We do limited edition prints,
okay,
and I'm actually working on a whole kind of film noir series that's reflective of the Everybody Breaks the Glass video, which I did
okay
all the artwork for. That's going to be on release. So hopefully to save up for a show or showing or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's just fun. It's another element of creativity that is in music, you know?
Yeah.
So your Wonder Woman appreciation is well documented. Are there any other underrated superheroines out there that you want to give a plug to?
Who would I reference? You know who I love? I've always been a fan of her since I was a kid, is Poison Ivy. And I know she's a villain, but I've always thought she was so badass. I used to practice her walk from the movies and I you know, all the books. And she's a good one. But, you know, there's a lot of female stars that aren't necessarily leads or heroes in their own right, but there's something really captivating about them. I mean, one example would be from Why the Last Man, that series. I don't know if you've read it.
I haven't.
It's I highly recommend it. It's a comic series. You can get in like 10 trade paperbacks or 5 deluxe editions. And it's about basically every Y chromosome is wiped out. So there's only one guy left in the world, and it's kind of a look at like the way the world would be when it's only women, and it's kind of like post-apocalyptic. And
oh wow.
You know, everyone wants the one guy that's left to either kill him or clone him or something, whatever. And really cool. But there's a bunch of really great female characters in that, obviously, because there's really only girls.
Cool.
And, you know, there's a Russian spy who wears an eye patch. And I was really drawn to her. In fact, my Vengeance painting was inspired by that character, which is a woman with an eye patch. The character in the book didn't have red hair or anything.
I think someone was wearing a shirt or a hoodie or something.
Yeah,
like that.
That's the painting.
Yeah.
That's the painting, yeah.
Now, one superheroine I can recommend, not super, but Hack Slash. I like that series.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Yeah, it's definitely very good. Trade paperbacks, all that, and I think they're working on a movie, but who knows? All right, so do you think someday we'll see a traditional Captain Lights physical comic book or something even else from your inspiration in a physical form?
I hope so. I mean, if anything continues with Captain Lights, we did those 10 episodes online with Tom Coker of Marvel, and I'm not sure if we'll work together again. I mean, he's a very busy man. I certainly hope so. But if I do continue Captain Lights, I feel like I want it to be in graphic novel form and go a little darker and go into more storylines as opposed to just quick episodes, you know. Just got a lot of potential.
All right. Your Webster also has a lightsaber keychain from what I saw.
Yeah.
Good way to not get sued there.
Yeah.
So which episode of Star Wars is your favorite?
Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's acceptable, definitely. Yeah. And did you know episode 4 was kind of inspired by the Japanese film The Hidden Fortress by Akira?
I didn't know that.
There are elements of it, especially the first draft of the screenplay.
Oh, interesting.
And a few little bits remained, like R2-D2 and C-3PO, or kind of were bandits in the original movie.
That's hilarious.
And the princess, but we'll get to that
later.
Let's see. Now, the first time I heard of you was a few years ago when you collaborated with Silverstein.
Okay, cool.
Big fan of them.
Cool.
How did that come about?
It's kind of a funny story. I mean, I'll tell it backwards. I mean, when I was 16, I was a big fan of Silverstein. And I would be, you know, Warped Tour, front row, getting my ribs caved in and, like, trying to sing along. And, you know, I believe I probably wrote them fan mail, too. And I think one of them wrote me back years ago. And, lo and behold, years and years later, you start to make your own music, and you move away from that area, the era of fanhood, and move to Toronto, and through mutual friends, met Bill, Billy from Silverstein, who is now a good friend of mine, and I didn't tell him all that stuff at that point, and then he said, why don't you sing on our new record, we'll sing on our songs. I was like, of course, you know, I love your music, let's do it. And then I told him that day that
such a great song.
It was really funny. Yeah, a really amazing song, and it was a cool chance to do something different, and it was great. It brings in, it's a cool chance for like crossover from both of our fan bases.
Yeah.
They come to Allentown quite a bit, and well, you should too someday.
Yeah.
But Henry and
we
I got
played
to
Allentown before.
Oh, okay. Must
yeah.
Be.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, we played. I feel like we played Allentown like twice, maybe with Owl City or something.
Well,
when did we play Allentown?
No,
maybe it's
probably
Alcide. Probably Alcide, or maybe our tour in 2009. We definitely
played
Allentown,
yeah. Henry and I got to briefly talk to like 3 out of 5 guys, everyone
nice.
But Bill and Shane.
Oh, okay.
So it was like February or something. It was freezing out. We were standing in snow.
Oh, dear.
And, Paul was wearing short shorts and running like from bus to venue. He was like, oh, I can't stay out here too long.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Freezing.
But on a similar subject, it seems as though many Canadian artists are pretty tight-knit as far as making guest appearances on each other's albums.
Would you say that's mostly because of location, or is there a national, there's a conscious, you know...
keep it Canadian.
Yeah, to keep it national pride, to keep it Canadian,
well,
yeah.
It's kind of a combination of a few things. I mean, the Canadian industry, once you're in it, is actually pretty small.
Okay.
It's a pretty small world. You get to know everybody, and at events like the Junos and Canadian Music Week and things like that, everyone's together, and you talk, and you meet. And it's a pretty small world. And there is this underlying sense of patriotism that it's a community and you're supporting each other. And I mean, we see that with bands like Broken Social Scene, Stars, Arcade Fire, where they're all members of the same band, switching partners, you know. It's cool. It's really cool. So I think that has something to do with a lot. I mean, Siberia is a perfect example of that. It's a completely Canadian record. Holy Fuck's Canadian.
Yeah,
Shad's Canadian. Jay from USS Canadian. You know, it's there's something special about it, I think, being Canadian.
Cool. Very cool. You also appeared on the latest Bring Me the Horizon album along with songs for L City and The Secret Handshake. That is a pretty wide sampling of genres, which you've been involved in. Is your phone constantly ringing off the hook with collaboration requests?
Every now and then. I mean, it's important not to just do it, you know, for the sake of doing it. It's important that you do it if you like the song and, you know, if you're friends and you want to support each other and things like that. So, yeah, and I think that you should limit how much you actually do. So I've been very careful and choosy about what I do.
Yeah.
But the ones I have, I've been really proud of.
And you've said in the past that you're a fan of black metal, which might be surprising to some considering the style of music that you play. What got you into that, and do you have any favorites?
In terms of black metal, pop black metal would be Cradle of Filth. I used to want Gabrielle played at my wedding. But when I was in my teens, I was a big fan of metal. I was in a metal band called Shovelface. And we were very inspired by it. Not so much black metal, it was like Fear Factory and Mudvayne and things like that.
Yeah.
But black metal was kind of a branch out from that, and I was listening to Dark Funeral and Cradle of Filth. We go on snowboarding trips and just listen to black metal all the time. So it's definitely fun. It's good to like a lot of different things.
Sure.
And whether or not it influences your music directly, you can still really enjoy it.
Oh,
so
totally.
I still do, yeah.
Awesome, yeah. I'm a huge fan myself. So And since we're all huge Rancid fans, I was wondering how you decided to cover Fall Back Down on your acoustic EP. That was a pretty unexpected surprise.
Thank you.
Very awesome.
It's such a good song. I mean, I used to work in a music store, and I would play that song all the time for some reason. We had, like, I don't know, like six records that we could play. And for some reason, Rancid was one of them. And that song was always the one that stood out to me the most. And what was it? Probably 2009, Tim Armstrong remixed Ice.
Okay.
And it kind of sounded kind of transplanty.
That's awesome.
And then we put it on a remix pack called the Ice Pack, which is six Ice remixes.
Oh, cool.
So I guess I was on his radar, and then we met, and he's amazing. Just such a down-to-earth guy. And the song not only was a tribute to the song, but a tribute to them and him. And I think he had no problem with me doing it as well. But
it's such a good song.
It's so positive, and I think it's really important to always be positive. Especially with songs,
definitely.
You know, with songs that are influencing people, and that's one of them for sure.
Definitely.
I just saw a few days ago that you're contributing something to a Talk Talk tribute album.
Yeah.
Well, what can people expect from your contribution?
Oh, it's something I'm really stoked on. I mean, I'm a huge Talk Talk fan, and the song is "Living in Another World," and it's their chord progressions, their changes, just so complicated. Just figuring out the song was a challenge for me. The version I sent in was very acoustic-y, and then we kind of went back and forth and collaborated with one of the members of Talk Talk, and who's working with a partner. There's like a pair of them that's called Dark Stars.
Okay.
And they do remixes and electronic, basically. So they put their spin on my spin of the song, which completely changed the tempo. Like, I changed the tempo of the song, which was very, I think, a bold move to make, but I did it with this kind of like little... a different feel. So it's something that I think will be exciting for someone who is a Talk Talk fan and people who are a fan of mine.
Sure.
So, or people that are Talk Talk fans and people that are fans of mine, like it's a bit like of a combination of the two. So that's cool.
Yeah, a friend of ours played Laughingstock by them.
Oh, wow.
So that's pretty much the only exposure I have to them, but I'll go back and check out.
Well, you probably know It's My Life, Don't You Forget. No, Doug covered it.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
That's
a Talk Talk
song.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Being a Bjork fan, which album would you suggest to someone who's new to her?
Oh, that's a hard question. My favorite album is Vespertine.
Okay.
There's a lot of beautiful details in it that I think create this great environment in the music, and that's what I love about Bjork. It's like it's another world. But you know what? If you're not a Bjork fan yet, listen to like the greatest hits. That has
okay.
great stuff on it, you know.
It's always
yeah.
a safe.
Yeah.
Choice.
There's a lot of great songs in there. I mean,
it's missing. It's so quiet though. If it's the same greatest hits that I've heard, I was like,
oh really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the one I have. Yeah, I don't think it has that on it.
Gotcha.
Best song of all time would be Yoga, though.
Quite a few years ago, you helped out on the soundtrack for an independent film called 1 Week. Have there been any other opportunities for movie work lately, and or have there been any movies that you wish you had a chance to do music for?
Oh, I don't know. I would love to be involved in those kind of things, and I think that I will when the right projects come up. That was a great experience because I'd never heard a take on a soundtrack like that. I didn't sing any lyrics. I was
just
singing. I was just singing. I didn't even write the music.
Okay.
I just, they basically, it was, his name was Andrew, I can't remember his last name. Andrew something.
Okay.
He did the entire soundtrack. His name's eluding me right now. He's amazing. And he composed everything and just had me put my, kind of insert my vocals in, drifting over it like an instrument. So it was a really cool way to
That's
treat
good.
A soundtrack.
Yeah.
yeah. And it was pretty potent and cool. And I definitely would love to do more stuff like that, whether it's in soundtracks or whether it's actually acting. Who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I have tattoos, so I'm going to be a little bit typecast at this point, but whatever.
Yeah.
It'll be
just
fun, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to delete this,
right? Well, you mentioned Shovel Face, which I was going to ask about, so I'm glad you mentioned it already. But any chance at some point you'll put together a 3-piece band and do a Propagandhi cover tour?
Oh, man. I don't know if we'll ever reunite, but man, probably starting some kind of metal star crush would be so much fun, and it's not beyond what I would love to do someday, because I do love that kind of thing. I don't know, Shovel Face would be
we're not holding
again,
anything,
but
just throwing it out there, okay. And but congratulations on being nominated for a Juno this year.
Thank you.
Yeah, best pop album.
Yeah.
So what's up for you the rest of the year?
A lot of touring. It's going to be finishing out the year, basically touring on Siberia. Lots of festivals this summer, going back on a big tour again this fall. Hopefully working on an acoustic release too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is how I always end interviews.
Okay.
You're on a desert island, one album for the rest of your life. What is it?
Oh. Man, that's a hard one.
Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
Probably like, I'm going to go with the cheesy Joshua Tree by U2.
Okay. That's a safe choice.
Very timeless.
Yeah, I'd go with London Calling too, but I mean, that's just me.
Oh, that's a good one too.
No, you know,
it's not going to be hard to pick.
No,
it would be terrible.
Yeah, it's hard to pick one.
But I mean, from where I'm at right now, what I want to listen to for the rest of my life right now would be like a Bon Iver record, because I'm in that mood right now.
Yeah.
But
not
you got to go with something timeless.
Yeah, well, that's that as far as the questions. Thank you very much for that.